Welcome to Not So Different, a podcast from the Center for Biosimilars. I'm your host, Senior Editor Kelly Davio. In July, the Trump administration withdrew its proposal to block rebates and discounts given by drug makers to pharmacy benefit managers, Part D plans, and Medicaid managed care organizations. HHS previously said that the rule would counteract incentives behind higher list prices for drugs. Currently, when a list price rises, patients who pay a percentage or all of the list price for a drug see their out-of-pocket expenses increase, while PBMs reap financial rewards. The now-withdrawn rule could have undercut the incentive for PBMs to favor drugs with higher rebates over drugs like biosimilars that have lower list prices. Withdrawal of the rule was a discouraging development for many physicians who hoped that the proposal would give relief to their patients at the pharmacy counter. This week on the podcast, we're speaking to one such physician, Dr. Madeline Feldman. Dr. Feldman is a rheumatologist in private practice with the Rheumatology Group in New Orleans, Louisiana. She's also president of the Coalition of State Rheumatology Organizations, which is a founding member of the Alliance for Transparent and Affordable Prescriptions, or ATAP. She's also chair of the Alliance for Safe Biologic Medicines and a past member of the American College of Rheumatology's Insurance Subcommittee. Dr. Feldman, thank you so much for joining us for this episode of Not So Different.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So earlier this year, HHS put forward a rule that would remove safe harbor protections for rebates passed to PBMs from drug makers and create new safe harbor on rebates that pass savings directly to patients on Part D drugs. What would that rule have done for patients and for the Medicare program?
Well, as you stated, there are rebates from pharmaceutical manufacturers that are passed directly back to PBMs, predominantly for preferred placement on formularies. And they received safe harbor from the anti-kickback statute basically because they are kickback. So it's been sort of noticed over time that a lot of these rebates have not benefited the patients, not only in the commercial space, but they didn't benefit patients in Medicare Part D plans as well. So in order to at least correct that for the Part D, CMS proposed taking away that safe harbor, meaning that those rebates would then be considered kickbacks to the PBMs, and creating a safe harbor for patients at the pharmacy at the time of purchase to take those rebates. So essentially what that would have done would have made it so that the patients pay less for their drugs at the drugstore. There was also a Medicaid component to it as well, and I'm not going to get into that because the Medicaid beneficiaries wouldn't have directly benefited. So that's a different commentary. But certainly for Medicare beneficiaries, when they went to the drugstore to pick up their drugs, the cost of their drugs to them would have been less. And this would have been a boon to patients because as we know, drug prices are spiraling, patient cost shares are going up, and all of the rhetoric coming out of the PBMs, saving costs to the healthcare system, is never realized by the patient. So this particular proposed rule, we were looking forward to it becoming a final rule, and as you stated, it was pulled back, retracted, and now we're stuck right back where we were before.
Now that it seems that rebates are here to stay, what impact is that going to have on patients?
Well, hopefully rebates aren't here to stay. But the entire idea of rebates was to reduce the cost of high-priced medications. But what has happened over the years, and it's a very entrenched system, the rebate system, is that the rebates were used as sort of a profit mechanism for the PBMs, whether it was the rebates, which are based on a percentage of the list price, whether it was the administration fees based on a percentage of the list price, whether it was, a price protection rebate. Not to take any blame away from pharmaceutical manufacturers, but I testified before the Health Subcommittee on from Energy and Commerce, and actually the representative from PCMA, which is the trade group for all of the PBMs, had to admit that they picked higher-priced drugs over lower-priced drugs. So I think if we can see that that is the case with the rebate system, I have hope that at some point that changes. Because if you think about it, you know, we're all up in arms about the higher prices of drugs. Biosimilars, you know, received a fast track in order to lower the cost of expensive biologics for patients. But if the formularies are based on a profit margin for PBMs, lower priced drugs such as biosimilars don't have a chance. And I think just even taking that one aspect of drug pricing might be enough to do something to change the system. There are a number of transparency laws that are being considered federally. There have been a number of state legislation issues that have dealt with PBMs in terms of oversight and transparency. So I do have hope that in the future, formularies, I mean, it's a very simple concept. Have your formulary based on the lowest price drug, not the lowest cost to PBMs. Because those reductions in costs are not transferred onto the patient, which consequently would have happened with this rebate rule.
And as far as biosimilars are concerned, do you foresee the withdrawal of the rule just keeping biosimilars in the holding pattern that they seem to have been in for some time?
Well, as of now in the United States, there are no Part D biosimilars. You know, I was hoping when the first biosimilar for adalimumab came out that it would cause a disruption in this rebate system because it would show how formularies, whether it's commercial formularies or Part D formularies, if the biosimilar was not chosen to be on the formulary, then it would you know, show the PBMs for what they are, that they're not actually trying to pick lower-priced drugs. You know, the pharmaceutical manufacturers, you know, maybe initially, particularly those that make the more expensive drugs, have benefited from this. The ones that come out with lower priced drugs are essentially blocked from the formularies. So when the first Part D biosimilar comes to market, it would be interesting to see how many formularies pick it up. Now, again, it's going to depend on who made that drug, because if you already have an entrenched spot on a formulary with a so-called rebate wall, you have a much better chance of using that position to negotiate, and it gets very complicated, and I'm sorry it gets this way, but that's how it is. That particular manufacturer would have an advantage over a different biosimilar maker who has no positioning already on formularies. So it does get complicated, and unfortunately, it's not the one who makes the best product for the lowest price. It's the one that already has leverage in the formulary system. And perhaps if that particular manufacturer can use the leverage they have on some of their other products, they may be able to get their lower price biosimilar on the formulary.
So one of the reasons that the administration has pointed to for withdrawing the rule is that there are congressional efforts underway to reduce drug costs through legislation. What do you think about that argument?
You know, I think they were trying to figure out any possible thing to say that would somehow justify it. Yes, there are some exciting pieces of legislation coming out, particularly on transparency, that might help in transforming the way PBMs put together a formulary, which could perhaps have bidding to get on the formulary based on the lowest price. There's so much, you know, partisan bickering going on. I think it's kind of wishful thinking that they're going to come up with something that they agree on. You know, there's several large bills coming out of the Senate, particularly one out of Energy and Commerce and another one that's being voted on in Finance. The one coming out of Energy and Commerce has an entire section on transparency of the amount of money that PBMs get from manufacturers, and I think that would be very helpful. Anytime you can shed light on a system that is perverse and sort of upside down, it may help change it. You know, I'm not certain. There have been other suggestions as to why this rebate rule has been pulled. One was that it would increase premiums, and that's the one that the PBM lobbying organizations have been trying to put forth, that it's actually going to end up costing seniors more. But if you look at the Part D premium situation, you know, about 30%, 30 to 40% of Part D beneficiaries get low income subsidy to pay their premiums, so they would not be affected. The other 60% of those, only 7% don't go to the drugstore and pick up a drug. Everyone else has to bear the brunt of higher prices when they go to the pharmacy to pick up their drugs. So we're looking at a small percentage of Medicare beneficiaries that would feel the increase in premiums. How much the premiums would increase, it varies from what you read, but it, apparently from what I've seen, you know, it's anywhere between maybe $6 to $10 a month. Now, I'm not minimizing that, you know, $10 a month can be a lot for some people, but if when you go to the drugstore, even to pick up a, you know, a non-biologic, if you get a $20 rebate handed to you at the time of purchase, that pretty much covers your premium for that month. So I think there was a lot of much ado about nothing when it came to premium increases and cost sharing for the patients. The other issue that was brought up was the cost to the federal government. And when we look at CBO estimates, you know, it's really very difficult to determine with that rebate rule how much it would have cost the federal government, because there are a number of monies that the PBMs get from manufacturers that are not passed back to the federal government. Administration fees, for example, are ones that they keep. And oftentimes those are based on a list price. And from my reading of the proposed rule, there would have been a section that talked about flat fee admin fees. And that, as well as price protection fees, any of those extra monies would then have gone back to the federal government, it may have helped mitigate some of the increased costs. There's also a quirky rule that if a proposed rule or a final rule is blocked by Congress, the CBO estimate of the cost of that would revert to Congress to use as they see fit without having to go through appropriations. So there's lots of governmental, you know, back and forth that may have gone into this reversal. But the obvious problem is this would have been an immediate help to patients trying to afford their medications, and it was retracted. And I think that the conversation we're having right now is there's a crisis in people being able to afford their drugs, and anything that can give them immediate relief would be helpful.
And speaking of getting relief to the patients who need it, what do you and ATAP ask of HHS and of Congress next?
Well, go back and take back their retraction of the rebate rule would be nice, but we know that's not going to happen. You know, their jurisdiction is over Medicare. And perhaps, you know, and I can't speak for all of ATAP. I'm also president of the Coalition of State Rheumatology Organizations, and I can't speak for all of them as well. But perhaps even a demonstration project where a formulary is based on the lowest price, and therefore pharmaceutical manufacturers would have to bring in with their lowest price to get onto the formulary, which would automatically reduce co-insurance, co-pays, the amount patients have to pay when they go into the drugstore, and see what type of effect it would have on patient spending. You know, even a minimal discount could be set up in order to get on the formulary. It would be open. So that would serve the purpose of allowing the doctor and the patient to make the decision on what's the best drug. And personally, as a rheumatologist, all things being the same, I'm going to pick the drug that has the lowest price, because I know ultimately that benefits not only my patient, but the entire healthcare system. So then you really have to, compete on price and efficacy and safety, and it's lowest price, not highest price, which is what the way the system is now. And because it's a demonstration project, I know this gets a little bit in the weeds, but it won't affect the best price that pharmaceutical manufacturers have to give to other various government programs. So even something as simple coming out of the Innovation Center with a demonstration project and see what the differential is in the cost to patients when they go to the drugstore.
Lastly, do you have any closing thoughts that you'd like to leave with our audience today?
Some of the arguments about this entire system and why we can't fix it is because it is too complex. And I think I'm getting tired of hearing that argument. Just because a system is complicated doesn't mean that it can't be fixed. And sometimes the simplest answers that cause a huge disruption to the system may be a way to, break into and shine light on, I hesitate to call them, the shenanigans that take place that keep a lot of the drug prices high. And I want to make it clear that, these high drug prices, we can blame both on the pharmaceutical manufacturers as well as the PBMs that enable them to raise their prices and actually encourage them to raise their prices so that they can increase their profits. Perhaps further oversight of PBMs. I think that some form of taking away safe harbor for rebates, which are truly kickbacks, may be something that has to be revisited, and I certainly hope that it is.
Well, Dr. Feldman, thank you so much for joining us today to share your thoughts on this matter.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Not So Different. If you'd like to read more about the now withdrawn rule, or if you'd like to read about some of the legislative solutions that Dr. Feldman mentioned in the podcast, visit our show notes. As always, if you like the podcast, we welcome you to rate us at iTunes. Until next time, find us at centerforbiosimilars.com.